If the guys would have happened earlier in my career, because of the perseverance, I had to get back in the military, because I fell on my face by getting kicked out of the military one time. I'd been through my divorces. I'd been through Ranger School. I'd been through RIP twice. I knew what it was like to fail and to continue to pick myself back up. That whole night, we didn't fail, but we hit obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, whether it was nobody's coming, whether it was us disobeying orders, whether it was just the firefights in themselves, whether it was we were outgunned and outmanned, whether it was when they told us nobody was coming all night, then they said they were, then they weren't, then the mortars that came in, we all could have given up at any time, and none of us did.
You're listening to the Christoph Lewis Podcast, a podcast where I have conversations with inspirational people. My name is Chris, but my family calls me Christoph. My goal is to have as many conversations as possible with people who have forged their own path by pursuing their dreams, making them a reality, all the while emitting positivity and sharing this knowledge with others. I seek these people out and share this information with you, proving to the world that you can do what makes you happy and do what you want for a living while being a good human being. We'll talk about careers, but we'll also cover any story that inspires. Let's do this while helping each other. Thanks for listening. I'm happy you're here. What's going on, my friends? Welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast, Create Your Career. This is conversation number 109, and we've had over 170 episodes now. My guest today is the man himself, coming from 13 hours a night in Benghazi. The one and only Chris Tonto Peranto. He is a former Ranger and former contractor, and he's done incredible things. He's an author of 13 Hours, Ranger Way, and most recently, The Patriot's Creed. This has been one of the most fun conversations that I had, and also one of the most serious conversations I had. At the end, I asked him one of my favorite questions that I could not wait to ask him, and it was, what was the most powerful lesson that you learned after 13 hours that night in Benghazi? And it was, he answered it in true Chris Tonto Peranto way. It was so good, and he's just such a fun guy, such a good father and such a good friend, and I knew it was gonna be a good one, but this one blew me out of the water, and I really, really cannot wait to share it with you. Remember that you can find this conversation and all the other contemplations, which are only on audio, on christophlewis.com/podcast and on any of your most favorite podcasting apps available. So enjoy this podcast episode as much as I did. And there are some great lessons here. And like I say in the contemplations, I think what I start saying here is these are conversations that have a lot of value in them. These guests are giving their life experiences and a lot of great advice to us. And you know what? It's a good story and it's a fun podcast, but if you don't apply anything from this podcast, it doesn't really mean anything. It'll be fun. It'll be good shock value maybe, but if you really subscribe to a growth mindset and you want to do better for yourself, for your family, and just in your life, apply some of this stuff from here, okay? They have lived the lives and they are sharing their lives, and I'm just so full of gratitude for that. So without further ado, welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, bro. Thanks for your service too. And I'm sorry, I'm in my bedroom. This is the best place I can do the interview right now. I just walked in the door, but I appreciate it, man.
And that's the type of guy you are, though. Like, after following your content and knowing about you, and now especially after reading your book, with, if you're watching on YouTube, it's up here on the counter up here. But that's the type of guy you are, man. And I really appreciate that. You just come in the door and here you are talking to me. Thanks.
Well, you know, if you don't really give, excuse my language, and I do believe Christians can cuss. I honestly think that Christians, if I ever meet somebody that doesn't cuss a little bit, I'm skeptical about it. That, and if you don't, if you're not able to laugh when somebody talks about poop, I'm really skeptical.
This is true.
About yeah, man. If you, I tell people, and that's why, you know, when they, I think I'm a decent speaker, is that I really don't give a shit what you think about me. I'm just me. If it offends you, or if you don't like it because I'm not sitting, you know, I'm not at it with a tie on, well, you know, maybe I'm not for you, but that's okay. Yeah. I'm still just me. So, and I appreciate you letting me do that too. It's nice. And my 4-year-old would have, brother, if we would have done this downstairs, yeah, he would have been, he'd be running around everywhere.
Yeah, my 8-month old, she would have been around here screaming and everything because we would have woken her up. So yeah, I tell you, man, like, we were just talking about this will come out in a couple weeks, but we're recording this night before Halloween, and yeah, it's a pretty special time. We're looking forward to it. I know, be able to spend the time with the kids. But man, like I said, it's gonna be really fun. We're really looking forward to it, and we got some good stuff cooking. But for a lot of people are familiar with you, but for those of them who aren't, let's just run over like a little synopsis of his who Chris Tanto Peranto is.
Let's see. I'm 4'2". I love long walks on the beach. And,
yes.
And slow jams at night, preferably Barry White. I was in the Army with the Guard and Reserves inactive. My total time was really 8 years. I did 10 years as a contractor for various contracting firms, military contractor, security contractor, whatever the PC term is nowadays. I did serve with and I'm honored, always honored to say this, I was part of the 2nd Ranger Battalion, or I was part of the 75th Ranger Regiment, which that really means the world to me. That was something I always wanted to do. And I actually had to do it twice because of my stints that I left the military and came back in. So I'm always proud to say that, even though I'm not I still consider myself a junior ranger, because there's guys that have done it for years.
Yeah, sure.
For years, yeah. Guys. But I'm still honored to say, I was part of that lineage, because to me, being a ranger, and we can get pissing matches left and right. Still, to me, a ranger is the best of the best, and that's what I'm honored to say. So I was with the Ranger Regiment, and then I was also part of the infamous or famous or whatever you want to say the night in Benghazi, Libya. Yeah. With other security contractors, three Marines, two of former Navy SEALs, and then myself, and we were there that night fighting on behalf of the United States government, fighting on behalf of the Central Intelligence Agency, and then helping to try to protect Ambassador Chris Stevens, and of course it was made into a movie called 13 Hours, I try not to make light of it too much, but that's just me.
Yeah,
if you've seen the movie, you see the goofiness, you said that actually is just me. Mm-hmm. So I'm just being myself again. Be like, oh, that insensitive SOB. No, that's just Tano. That's everyone. How he is. He doesn't mean anything bad by it. He just, when he feels uncomfortable, he tells jokes. So
That's how people deal with it, though. You know, everybody deals with it differently, and I think that's fine, man. I mean, you lived it, and it's your life, it's your story, so you can deal with it how you like. You know,
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
like most guys that are in the service and they've gone on to the special operations community, that's where the sense of humor comes from.
Yeah.
Some even make a very good living off simply having a sense of humor and being portraying that sense of humor. Into the public, Article 15 and Black Rifle Coffee. Those guys, I love them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're friends. They're actually very good friends. And I have no disrespect on them at all. Evan Hafner's brilliant. Matt's hilarious. He's very intelligent as well. That's smart. I mean, they're doing things, and I got nothing wrong with that at all. I just like to give shit because I can.
Yeah, because you can. Absolutely. You know, one of the things, so like I was saying, I just finished and I strategically planned it. I'm reading a book a week for a year, and I read your book last week and I really liked it. And it was the first time I had read it. And I was, I thought one of the things is pretty interesting that you mentioned already, that you came in, you came out, and then you went back in and you had to start all over again. And I'm just like, that... Not a lot of people would have been, people would have come back in and said, hey, you know, let's do this again. But I think maybe some people would have said, oh, shit, I got to start all over again. Because you were in a little bit already, you know. So, like, talk us through what your mindset was going through that all the way again from the very beginning.
The mindset was from my father. The mindset came from him. It's like you start something, and that kept resonating
through
my head. Every year that I was trying to get back in, because I had to get waiver after waiver because of the reasons that I got out the first time.
Yeah.
It was a 2-year process that I had to, I actually took me two years to do. First things first is I set another goal. And I think every guy that gets out of the military guy to me out there, all you folks, is a gender neutral term. I mean, men and women when I say guy. So since we're in this gender neutral thing, then I'm going to utilize that as well. Guy means men and women. So guys, men and women, when you get out of the military, you have to find you have to set a mission. You still have to have a goal. I think I've lost a lot of buddies. I'm sure you have too. I'm not just saying it that through suicide. It's because we don't set a goal for us when we get out. When we get out, we're not ready. And we're used to having that goal set for us by our platoon sergeant, our leaders, our COs. But when I got out, And it was, I wasn't ready for it. I set a goal. But my goal was to get my master's degree. I had something set.
Yeah.
So I didn't just flounder.
Yep.
But also the other goal was, okay, I got to get back in. Because my dad, his voice in my head every day, once you start something, son, you need to finish it. Once you start something, son, you need to finish it. And I didn't feel like I'd finished what I'd started with in the Army, Airborne, yeah, Rangers. So that was my goal. And yeah, it was honestly, I knew what to expect. So the expectation process, the mind games, then, you know, the book, and I call them FF games. And FF games are, most of those games are not knowing. The physical stuff we can do.
Yeah.
It's mentally yeah, screwing that's the worst, ourselves because for sure, we're not told what we're going to expect. Well, we knew what to expect all the way up through Ranger Indoc, which is now RASP. So I was already preparing to get my body ready for it. I'm very blessed that my father and mother gave me good genes. So I was already I was pretty athletic to begin with. And then I was able to run distances. I was very blessed with that ability. Mm-hmm. Some guys are blessed and some guys aren't. They hate it.
I had to work at it.
Yeah, those guys have to work at it. I was blessed that I could just go and speed. And so actually when I got to basic training the second time, which, you know, there was, the mindset was just to continue to work and get waiver after waiver after waiver to get in. And that's why I tell people, if you're ever get out of the military and you go to a recruiter that says, no, I can't get you in, go to another recruiter because there's waivers for everything.
Yeah, that's good advice.
And but I got my master's degree, and also I worked. I actually became a civilian, and I actually got certified. I worked at Mutual of Omaha, and you know, I acclimatized myself. I reacclimated myself into society, but that was by setting a goal. But then also the mind state was, let's get back in the Army. And as soon as I got the waivers to get back in, I found a recruiter that would actually help me here in Omaha, Nebraska. I went back in, and you know, I can honestly say it wasn't because I was ready. The military did get easier in the 2-3 years from first basic training to second base. Just the ability of DIs or drill instructors, DSs in the Army, DIs in the military, of them to be able to put their hands on. First time I was in a 95, oh, hell yeah, they were putting hands on guys. I was like, wow, wait, this is Full Metal Jacket. And every instructor I had at Fort Benning, that was at 258, every one of them had a Ranger tab. I think only one didn't. And that's, you know, infantry basic training, that you should have your Ranger tab if you're going to be a drill instructor. It's my opinion. You should. You're infantry. Second time I went in, I think there was one drill instructor that had one. He was a senior drill instructor, and because he served with 75th Ranger Regiment as an E7 before he came and became Air First Sergeant. Mm-hmm. And that shocked me.
Okay.
And then I just saw that there was a lot of stuff they couldn't do to us due to the climate, the kinder, gentler, nicer. Not saying that we didn't have tough guys, because we did.
Sure.
Leroy Petrie was one of the guys that went through with me in my second basic training class. We had some tremendous guys. If those you don't know Sergeant Petrie, he won the Medal of Honor.
Wow.
When he was with the gun. And he was, I can tell you stories about Leroy, though, when we were basic training. Leroy wasn't Leroy, but he never quit. That man could persevere. He could. I admire him for that. But I did. I went through it again. The second time, though, was much easier. Again, not just because I knew what to expect. I mean, I could outrun my drill sergeants. I was ready for it, but I was ready. It really was things that changed. The standards had been lowered.
Interesting.
You know, they
really
had. And, wow. Yeah. So I'm, and that's just me seeing it. So that's a plus. On at least I can speak eloquently about is the military getting
sure.
easier?
Yeah.
Well, my opinion.
Yeah. At least there. Yeah.
At least in what I went through, because I went through it twice.
That's funny. Like, people are always like, "Oh, it was so much harder back in my day. It was so much harder." And like, you are an actual case study of it's true.
Well, but you're right. I was the last hard class. It's always
That's so funny. But like, one of the good things you said that I really liked is like, it's really tough, or we make it tough for ourselves when we don't have a goal when we get out. And I love talking about like career transitions, because one of the main reasons that I started the podcast was when I was in a leadership position, I had 45 sailors that I was in charge of, and a lot of people were getting out and they didn't really have a plan, or they didn't have a good plan, or they had some kind of, they thought they had a plan, or there were people that were in and they were complaining and not liking their job. And I'm like, listen, like, you have the ability to do what you want to do, and you need to have a plan regardless of if you want to stay in, then you need to have a plan. You need to have direction. And if you want to get out, you need to have a plan and direction. And that's why I really liked what is your story, and reading your book is learning more about that. Of even when you did get out, you had a plan. And when you wanted to get back in, it's great that you said, you were told no, and then you went to other places and you kept on looking and you kept on looking. Like, don't take no for an answer. Like, the mind is such a powerful thing. Like you said, the physical stuff you can do and you can get better at, but the mental stuff, man, like when you set your mind to do something, honestly, it's hard to fail. Ultimately, you may feel fail initially, but like you will eventually get there if you've decided that you want to do it. And I just love seeing that when I talk about the career transitions. And one of the things I got out of the book that I love that you said, because one of the things that people tell me is that, oh, the careers in the military and the Navy are such a safety net, right? So you probably know what I'm about to say because it's in the book and it says like you hate safety nets. And for those, I wrote it down here and quote, I hate that term safety net. Do you know what your best safety net is? It is working your ass off, getting a job and continuing to work your ass off, end quote. And I think that is, we can literally take a page out of your book. And I absolutely love that. Like create, like this is the Christoph Lewis podcast, create your career. And you're like creating your own safety net there. So don't rely on something else to have your safety net.
And that's not even from the military. That's from my father.
Exactly. That's so good.
It was just reinforced in the military to make yourself indispensable.
Yeah.
Whenever I teach, you can even apply it even to the simplest thing when I teach civilians or law enforcement, military about clearing rooms. What do we do? What do you do when you're clearing a room or you're in an environment like a mountain environment, urban environment? Do you ever stand still? No, you find work.
Yeah.
What's the same thing? Yeah. It's as simple as just find something to do. Find work. You should never be stable. Make yourself indispensable. And that's another reason why I went and got my master's degree. I mean, it gave me a goal, but it also said, you know what? Having this down the road, whether I use it or not, and I believe I don't think I've used it except when I became an officer. I didn't.
I might ask you about that later.
I did when I got commissioned. But it's still something that's there when people see it, whether you use it or not. Even me, it maybe it's superficial, but when I'm going even through resumes to see who I want, maybe somebody to come help me or work for what I've got going on now, I'll look at that background, and it may not be, well, now they're smarter. No, it just means that they have a good work ethic, or they at least can learn. They have the ability to get through frustration and then learn. So when you have military and education, to me, I'm like, and I tell people that are hiring, like, that's who you want.
Yeah.
I mean, I want the military guy. I really do, because I know that they're going to be able to handle duress and stress the majority, especially combat veterans.
Yes.
When you've got military and education, both, it doesn't need to be a master's. It can be an associate's, it can be a bachelor's. It can be up to the graduate level degrees. I know you've got the best of both worlds, because I know also that he knows how to research. He or she knows how to research. They're not going to quit on you because they know how to handle the rest. But also, they know how to put up with the civilian world as well, as far as being, because you're going to be told no or getting a bad grade and you're going to be pissed off. And how can I do this? And you find a way to accomplish and work through it to get smarter. Smarter, and I should use that term loosely, smarter being with the grade, you'll be able to pass, get smarter to find what the professor wants you to do. So you have the work ethic, you can handle the stress, but you also have the ability to honestly handle yourselves in the civilian world by being told no for and being upset, and you can't punch your way out of that one. Yeah, you have to just go get in the books. All right, this sucks.
Yeah.
This sucks even worse than running 8 miles. Like, I go read a dang book for the day and write a paper. It means a lot, but it just shows work ethic.
It really does.
But it all started with my father. That's so cool. The military just revalidated.
Yeah, and you were born and raised in Colorado too. And I was born in Jersey, but I was raised in Colorado, out in Woodland Park, Colorado.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah, up there, city above the clouds. Yeah, so I've been up there, and I've been down in your area for football camps myself, and you know I'm very familiar with that. But I think it's cool, like, not only that you're from Colorado as well, and like I know that helped me with my training at high altitude, but the fact that you said your father raised you, you know, like. My father was just out here for like a couple of days visiting me and my our daughter, and I had some deep conversations with him, and I was like, you know, there's a lot of things that you taught me that I'm successful now all these years later because of you, the things that, you know, we talked about, the discussions we had, like literally speaking about football, you know, he'd tell me
football. I love my dad was a football coach.
He'd tell me to go out there. Yeah. He'd tell me to go out there and go, like, oh, damn, that's crazy. Well, I want to ask you about that in a second. But you know, you go out there, you don't try to catch the football, because we'd practice. And I started football so late. Like, I started playing football in senior year, and I wasn't very good at first, you know. And he would just take me out and practice. And he said, you go out there, you don't try to catch the football. You do catch the football. And that goes back with that mental aspect. Like, you decide you're going to catch the football. You decide you're going to do something. And, you know, you may drop it, you know, at first, but you'll start to catch it more and more and more. So I'm just saying, like, that resonates deeply for me because, like, I had that impact from my childhood because of my father as well and because of the things that he did with me. So I think it's really cool that you had that as well and that you guys took it to such a level of, like, state championship.
He did. I grew up with football my life. My dad was always a football coach. Head football coach at Adams State there in Alamosa.
Yeah. We went down to the football camp down there, man.
Yeah, that was it. And that's elevation right there. And that's cold. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But, you know, I grew up hanging out on the campus. He was the athletic director, head baseball coach, and the head football coach. So he was there. So I just got to run amok in the college. Yeah, I'd do whatever I wanted to do. And then it was coolest thing in the world. Think back now, going and just catching punts from the punter.
That's
and
so
then
cool.
he got a job at Brigham Young. And so we moved to BYU. And that was a fan. And I wrote a little bit about that in the right way. That was a tremendous learning experience for me about leadership because I got to be around. They don't make guys like Coach. And for those that follow college football, to hang around and just be around Coach Lavelle Edwards and Mike Holmgren and Norm Chow. I mean, Mike Holmgren won the Super Bowl, was with the Packers, head coach for the Packers. And he's the GM for the Seahawks. You had Steve Young. You had Jim McMahon there. You had Robbie Boston. Football world, all you guys know who these guys are. They won the national championship in 1984 when my dad was there. He coached the linebackers. Two of his linebackers played pro. For me to be growing up and I didn't know, I'll be honest, I mean, I knew they were good, but I didn't know. Yeah, I just took it for granted. Yeah. Like, my dad's here. He's a football coach. But you just—it's not by osmosis, but it kind of is that positivity, the leadership, the never quitting attitude, growing it, and me of just absorbing it by me being able to go and catch passes from Steve Young. You know,
that's so crazy.
At the time, he was the backup. for Jim McMahon. It's like, he's the backup. I'll go play catches with Steve. But you saw the work ethic. Yeah. Then you see Coach Edwards. He didn't have to say a word. He just had to give that look and. You're wrong or you're right. And you knew it. Mm-hmm. And I could even tell from fifth or sixth grade. My dad has that same thing. And then he went to Oregon State. And, you know, to grow up around college campuses, I know college people, and I get it. It does have its politics. It needs to remove it.
Yeah.
But I will never tell anybody to not go and experience that. And play intercollegiate athletics, great experience. And if you want to go to the military, it's a great base. It did prepare me. Now, I'm not going to say that, it made Rangers being a 75th Ranger. No, not at all. Yeah, it gave me a base. Then I stepped it up to the next level.
Yeah.
It was a kick in the nuts to go up. But
No,
it was. You learn about leadership. And I got experience with my father and my mother. I got to give my mother credit.
Sure.
Because she raised me tough. Little Mexican mom. No, don't mess up with the Mexican. Little Mexican mom. She pulled me by the ear, get over here, son. And she was my first grade teacher. I think I spent most of my first grade year in the hall because I was always in trouble.
Oh, man.
It was my mom, it was my teacher. Get out in the hall, Christian. I'm not your mother today. I'm your first grade teacher.
That's so funny. But
they both had tremendous work ethic.
That's really cool. That really does help so much. And my mom, she came here from Hungary. So I had this lady with a hard accent yelling at me too, and like I don't know if your mom had a hard accent or anything, but I had it growing up, and I was just like, oh my god, this is like twice as worse because of your accent.
Yeah, she got mad when I was younger. I always got the Christian, and then I get some Spanish. She speaks fluent in Spanish, so yeah, I get a little bit of it. My grandma was even worse. My abuela, she I got to go tough grandma and grandpa. No, that was definitely all Spanish when I was in trouble. That Hungarian accent, that's pretty.
It's tough. I got to experience it again when she came out here, but I want to dial it back, and there's something that I didn't see in the book, and I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I wanted to ask this question. I typically don't have a lot of like preloaded questions, but you brought up Benghazi in the beginning, and you know. I did want to ask, what do you think, and if it doesn't have to be one thing, but what do you think is like maybe the most powerful lesson or takeaway from that whole experience? Yeah. Is there something?
Again, it just comes back to simple things. Never quit.
Sure.
Never giving up.
Sure.
If Benghazi would have happened earlier in my career, the politics are, and that was, that's my fault. That's our fault.
Yeah.
I think we needed to at that time though, just not even just. We had to pick a side. We really did. But it was for me, it was for protection. It wasn't to see, oh, who's going to watch this more. It was, if we didn't pick a side at that point in time, mm-hmm. with right or left, and because of the politics of it, because of the election, I think we would have really got hammered from the powers that be. So I really believe that helped us. But it did hurt initially because the true story of Benghazi, which is never quit, never giving up. The lessons that you need to learn about leadership, about that sometimes man's law, you gotta throw that aside, and God's law's gotta come into effect. And that's that's sacrifice. That's John 15:13. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you have to sometimes be willing to give not just your life, but you may have to give your career up to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Doing the right thing. That integrity, right? Mm-hmm. It just, you know, and I wrote a third book called The Patriot's Creed that came out just a few days ago.
Oh, wow. I'll get that one.
It's based in the Army values, but it's also based Benghazi. And I was telling people, as why I was just saying, if Benghazi would have happened earlier in my career, because of the perseverance, I had to get back in the military, because I fell on my face by getting kicked out of the military one time. I'd been through my divorces. I'd been through Ranger School. I'd been through RIP twice. I knew what it was like to fail and to continue to pick myself back up. That whole night was crap, dude. We didn't fail, but we hit obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, whether it was nobody's coming, whether it was us disobeying orders, whether it was just the firefights in themselves, whether it was we were outgunned and outmanned, whether it was when they told us nobody was coming all night, then they said they were, then they weren't, then the mortars that came in. It was, you could have given up, and that's what you could have given up. We all could have given up at any time, and none of us did. Mm-hmm. And I do believe earlier in our careers, if we all would have been early on newbies, I think it may have turned out differently. Yeah, you know, hindsight is 20/20.
Sure.
I don't believe all those trials and tribulations that each one of us had gone through at that point in time. And all of us were older guys. Yeah. All of us have been doing this for years, 10 years plus. All of us were in our 40s at the time. And all of us had personal lives, kids. And so we'd gone through the personal trials and tribulations too. Maybe married more than once. I'd been married more than once, just something like that. I really think if it would have happened earlier, we wouldn't have been able to handle all the adversity. Because it was, the adversity came and it was, okay, suck it up. All right, what do we do? Keep moving forward.
Yeah.
You can't stop. Yeah. Keep moving forward. You just keep fighting. You keep fighting and we'll figure it out.
Sure.
And you're able to stay calm. But also, you're able to enjoy the moment. I enjoyed that whole night. Wow. I enjoyed because I was able to really just take a step, breathe, and calm myself because of everything I've been through the 10 years of deploying. I'd been deploying for 10 years at that point.
Yeah.
So I'd been to a lot of other places and just really enjoy it. That's what I always wanted to be able to do. Whenever I got in a situation, and early on, I wasn't ever able to enjoy it because I was so immersed in, I just got to stay alive, or I hope I don't screw up. I don't want to screw up. That I knew the job so well at that point in time. I was salty. I was salty at that point. I could enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's awesome when you can enjoy combat and you can enjoy the colors because everything's so bright because your adrenaline's just kicking in. When you can enjoy it, it was awesome. And even the times up before that, when I went to Yemen after, I was able to enjoy anything because you're not worried about screwing up anymore.
Yeah.
You're not worried about dying. You really aren't. You're there to do your job. You're not wanting to die, but everything just becomes habitual and you're able to actually enjoy the other things that are going on around you. And you know, even a cup of coffee tastes better because you're able to enjoy the scenery that you're in. Holy crap. I'm in the middle of Sana'a, Yemen, drinking a cup of coffee. Oh crap. I'm in the middle of Kandahar, Afghanistan, getting a kebab. That stuff doesn't taste great. It's just like, wow, I can enjoy this.
It's
and I'm
surreal.
Still aware of what's going on in my surroundings. It's awesome. So the positive nature, there's so many positive lessons learned you can take out of that night.
Yeah.
And I'd go back in a heartbeat. I would.
Yeah. Thanks for answering that. I do appreciate that. I've wanted to ask that since I read the book. And I think the positivity is absolutely key, but I think like one of the things, not only just from that night, but all the situations you just described, is like picking your head up in life. I mean, that's applicable to your entire life. Like pick your head up. Don't be so tunnel visioned and understand like what's going on around you. And like, I can't remember where I read it. It was another book, but they were literally talking about, you know, just being sucked into the moment always, and just pick up and stop everything and just like get outside and listen to the wind, listen to the trees, look at the stars, look at the sky, and just like appreciate what's around you and see what's around you.
Guys that are going down range the first time, yeah. When you have your nods on for the first time and you see a clear sky,
look up. I am telling you.
Look at the scars. How awesome.
I'll never forget, Chris. I'll never forget. I'll never forget.
You've been in Afghanistan especially.
Yeah.
Because there's no city to climb.
Best times of my life. Yeah.
In Kabul, there's really nothing.
Yeah.
And just looking, going, and marvel at it.
Yeah.
Marvel at
most beautiful thing. One of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life.
Isn't it?
My first deployment to Afghanistan, I was sitting in the, because everybody knows I wrote a podcast, didn't write a podcast. I shared my experience of Extortion 17 on here on the podcast. And before we used to go load the crypto, because I was FNG at the time, and I used to load the crypto on that bird. And one of the nights before I was loading the bird, both the Extortion 17 and 18. And I was out there and I was just laying in the bed of my truck with my nods on. I'd look up there and I'd see the trillion stars that are up there, shooting star every 10 seconds. And this is one of the best times of my life. And it's just funny because you're sitting in the middle of Afghanistan in the bed of a truck next to helicopters, you know, and God forbid mortars are coming in and hopefully not. And you're just out there and you're looking up in the sky and it's just like, holy shit, man. Like if somebody was looking through my eyes right now. Yeah. It's just, it's crazy. I love that you answered it that way.
My view is the same way. Just, and it's like, wow, I get to do this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then even catching a whiff of that damn diesel from the UH-60 or whatever's out there, and you're like,
yeah,
and it smells good. Yeah. And it is. You know, yeah. And you know, the old adage, I know it's a movie. Oh, they're nothing like napalm. The smell of napalm. Like, yeah. Oh, we don't get that theatrical, but it still is that smell.
Nah, smells very powerful. Right. Absolutely.
That tarmac has a certain smell, and it's just you're bringing stuff back to me.
Yeah, right, man. Now. That's good times though. Before we get out of here, I could carry on this conversation for 2 hours, but one, your phone's going to die, and two, we're almost out at the end of our time here. But
my daughter needs me to go. I got to go carve pumpkins. She's waiting on me to go carve pumpkins.
I love that. I can't keep you from that. So the last thing I wanted to ask you, because I always love, I love my guests. I truly do. But one of the things that I require in my guests before I even get them on here, and they're very unaware of it until I ask them this question, is I don't want people that just go out there and are making a good life for themselves. But I always have a guest on there that is helping other people. So to me, you wrote The Ranger Way to, one, to write about it, but two, to help other people. And of course, you know, there's the 14-Hour Foundation, all these things that you've been a part of and continue to be a part of. But my question always to people is, why have you chosen to donate so much of your time and your life to helping other people? And why do you just not stop with just yourself?
Yeah, if I told you it wasn't a bit cathartic, I'd be lying. It is.
Yeah.
And I'd say it's all self-serving, but it helps me. I've had post-traumatic stress. I don't believe it should be called the disorder. Sure. I was diagnosed in 2007. I know how to deploy with it. I know how to live with it. It almost beat me last year. It got me. But I try to help, especially other veterans or those that have gone through traumatic experiences, because I've been there. I've been there. Luckily, I'm not good at ending my life. I'm not. So I'm thank God I'm not, but I've been there. So, and it's an everyday process. So I don't want to, and I've lost a ton of buddies out there.
Yeah.
So to me, to help out, to give back, it helps me because it is cathartic, but it's also, I don't want to see anybody else quit on themselves.
Yeah.
I've been given an opportunity, and you can go one or two ways. You can be given an opportunity to go ahead and be selfish and go make a ton of money and just be that pretentious, arrogant ass, or you begin an opportunity to help others. I did that first route. I did it. I know it. I was awful. I let the ego get me. Ego was winning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a miserable person. And I know from my experience how to get out of it, because I was able to fight my way out of it back to being, I think I'm a very good father, a better husband. I'm never going to be the best husband. Just ask my wife, but I'm doing my best. She goes, it is hard with me to make you a good person. She just said that to me. But I believe all the mistakes I've made, people can learn from those mistakes. So you're not making them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any one of us that says, anyone that's out there, a self-helper, and I believe I'm kind of turning into a self-help person.
Yeah.
Those that have not screwed up royally and learn from those screw-ups, I don't think you really can learn from them. I can tell you all day, this is what you need to do, give you PowerPoint presentations and everything. But it comes down to, I screwed up. This is what I did wrong. Don't make this mistake. And some of us, though, are knuckleheads. I'm sure you're the same way, Marie. Yeah. I'm the same way. You know, sometimes we just got to put our hand on that oven to figure it out.
Yep.
But if I can just have a little bit, and that saves somebody's life, it saves somebody's marriage, it makes somebody a better father, it helps you win your first deployment, So you're not dropping your M4 magazine on the dang tarmac because you can't load it because you're so damn worried that somebody's going to, if it helps you into that or helps you get through Ranger school or anything, helps you finish college. Cause I did, it was difficult. I'm not a smart guy. If that helps you and you learn, it's like, gosh, he's an idiot, I'm not going to do that, then great. Learn from other people's mistakes. You know, that's how we get better, is we fail and then learn how to pick yourself up. Mm-hmm. I am not the strongest guy in the world, but I know how to pick myself up. I know how to keep going. That was from my father, and then it was from my mother, and then it was just reaffirming the military. You just don't quit. Yeah. So I know. And if somebody's listening, fine. If somebody's not, you know, you don't like what I'm saying because your ops are blacker than mine, that's cool too. I'm okay with that.
There's always somebody like that.
There's always somebody. Yeah, there.
That's okay. This is for the other people. Yeah. No, I appreciate you sharing that, man. Thank you. Yeah. It's like, it's a thing. Like, not everybody's going to like my podcast, but I do it anyway. And, you know, for those of the people that it does help, and for those of the people that you do help, those people are very appreciative of that. And I know they reach out to you, they reach out to me, and I'm forever grateful for that. And it gives me the fuel to keep on doing this. And let me tell you, man, this has been one of the most fun conversations I've had, and I'm so excited to release it here.
Thanks,
and I really appreciate it. But before we get out of here, where can everybody find you in the books?
Yeah, cristanoperano.com, .net, not .com, cristanoperano.net. And then the books are there, but the books, I have a great publisher, Hachette, so you can get all the books on Amazon, okay. Books a Million, ever. But if you want a signed copy, I come home and say, in fact, I got to go downstairs here a second after Comic Pumpkins, and I sign every book, and my wife put them in the mail and that's ship them cool. out to you. And that's 13 hours of Ranger Way and the Patriots Creed and DVDs and all that other fun stuff. If you help me pay for shipping, but other than that, I really don't make a ton of money off these. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I just want it out there if it's going to help. And then I do a lot of public speaking. And then actually, brother, I have a podcast. I just did my first one in the can yesterday in New York City. It'll come out in a couple weeks. So get reciprocity, man. You got to come back. You got to come on mine.
Oh, I would love that.
But I won't have a Wallace for you. I'm a flag.
It's a work in progress. This is my fourth office. It's been a lot of work.
It's all. But I appreciate it. But the color is very feng shui. It really is.
Yeah.
The color is so feng shui. It is. It's feng shui all the way.
Yeah.
I know it's feng shui, guys out there. All you trolls. I'm just making fun.
This was a kid's room, and I turned it into a war room. So I left the color despite everybody telling me to change it. So I am bucking the system by putting guns on like some seafoam green.
it's awesome. That turquoise just makes it all pop.
It does. And yeah, we'll definitely put all that stuff in the show notes. And I can't wait. I would love to have a signed copy. So I'm gonna buy those as well and add it to the Ranger Way here. But I appreciate that, and like I said, Chris, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it, and I can't wait to release this. It's been really fun and super informative. So much fun and so many good notes out of here, so many good lessons. And have a great rest of your night.
You too, bro. God bless you. Talk to you soon.